moved to this country.
Hey, you don't like the way I'm talking, hey. So you stand there, keep on calling me names. No, I'm not your enemy, so if you're gonna do it, then do it. Hey, do you wanna check my DNA? All the stories done to go away.
Welcome, everybody.
I'm believing fairy tales, oh.
It is the 6 o'clock hour, and thus the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Maggie Dawn, joined in the booth by Anya Esther. Good afternoon, Anya. How you doing today?
Oh, Maggie, I am doing. Today is certainly one of the days of my life, for sure.
chalk it up. It's one of those. We're going to jump right into it today. As you and I have been talking over the last couple of weeks, Anya, it has occurred to both of us in different ways that what is going on in Israel, and the history of how did we get here has some interesting echoes in our present moment in the United States. And that there may be some extractable lessons from all of this. And Anya and I are going to talk about this extensively today. If you want to join our conversations, 844-967-2789, what parallels do you see between Netanyahu's leadership rise to power, his, you know, longest ever serving prime minister of Israel, basically done in two chunks. What parallels do you maybe see to our current time? Because Netanyahu is a populist, right? And before we get into those parallels, and I'll let you speak, of course, for yourself, Anya. What I just want to say is, in this show, we're not going to be really commenting on Hamas, which is a terrorist organization. We're not going to be commenting on what Israel should or shouldn't do. We're not going to be weighing into that foreign policy argument. What we're going to be looking at is Netanyahu's power, what his politics are, and what those lessons are that can be observed, or facts observed that do speak to this very American moment. Maybe it would be best if you're cool with it. Like, here's these things that may seem so distant and far away, right? Actually are showing up in our everyday lives. Dom works out at the JCC on the north side. He said, you know, that Monday they had extra security and police at the JCC, that these things, though they seem removed, really do matter. And a friend of yours in Bayview had, upsetting doesn't even begin to cover it.
Yeah,
what happened today?
Yeah, so a friend of mine, I'm not going to name who, friend who lives in Bayview, has lived there for a long time. She walks a lot, walks alone, but during the day, you know, she takes these long multi-mile walks to process through things. And she told me before going on this walk, she was going to actually go out and try to process all the news about what was happening overseas, try to walk out the big emotions she was processing. And on that walk, she sends me one big text that says, "I just got yelled at from a truck. I don't know what he said, but I'm just realizing now I'm in my," and I'll leave out the name, but Jewish organization, insert here, sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. She was wearing a sweatshirt that had like a teeny tiny menorah on it, but it had Jewish iconography. And I immediately called her. I said, like, "Where are you?" We figured out where she was. I was like, "Well, there's this in that area. Could it have been this?" No. And we just stood there on video call with her stunned and with me stunned, like, well, it could be nothing. But in her words, he seemed really angry. He stopped his truck to yell at her before driving off. And now and then she's just alone on the street. Like, we just are all alone on the street, is the feeling. And then I just wait there for the next hour until she texts me. I made it home. I finished my walk. I'm back home safe. And it's like, is home even safe now? Like, it's it is a living nightmare, and it is taking everything in me to not swear on air right now while talking about it. So, yeah, it's a lot.
I can appreciate that. And extremism doesn't serve anybody.
No, right.
It just doesn't. Dehumanization of foes doesn't help anybody. So let us proceed. My best wishes to your friend. Be well, and know that some of us Gentiles care very much and are allies.
Yeah.
And we'll be there to support.
Thank you. It means a lot, because it there have certainly been moments these past week. Has it been a week? Has it been a month? I don't even know anymore.
Right.
Where it has felt like we're alone. So thank you for that, Maggie. And thank you to the people who we met yesterday who came up to me and said, I can't express how overjoyed I was to hear from people, just to hear that you listen. And then for people to say, I listened and what you said moved me. I really haven't stopped crying all day for a multitude of reasons, but some of them are joyous, like yesterday. So that's good.
Finding community in those that aren't like us, that don't pray like us, that don't believe like us, that should always be possible, right? And I hope, we're going to talk about some heavy stuff this show, but I hope that that is what people take away from this, that community is possible, communing with others.
Yeah.
Even when they look different, believe different, eat different, think different, whatever that is. And it's only through community that we can make things better. You don't make things better for just some people.
Right.
We got to do it for community.
Yep.
So here's my checklist. Donald Trump is a far-right populist strongman with authoritarian tendencies who's facing multiple federal and state indictments that largely relate to fraud and bad acting, lying, cheating, stealing, etc. Extrapolate different legal theories, but it's all basically about that. The man's a liar and a cheater and a thief. He elevates extremists and radicals. And in turn, when he does that, he expects personal loyalty to him. And that those people, those extremists and radicals that he promotes, that not only will they be loyal, but they will protect him no matter what oaths they have made to country or state. He sows division, racial hatred. He's dividing the country. He's undermining faith in our institutions. He has now lost the faith of most of our country's recent military leadership. He has undermined civic leaders. And his lackeys in Congress are now literally threatening our foreign policy, are the need for us to support Ukraine, as well as Israel. And have basically hobbled our military through obstructionism. The House of Representatives is in shambles. This is Donald Trump. So let's talk about Benjamin Netanyahu. When we were talking this morning about the show, Anya, you reminded me that the first time I saw Benjamin Netanyahu, I was a congressional intern for then Representative Tom Barrett, former mayor of Milwaukee, who was a member of the House of Representatives. It was the summer of 1996.
Wow.
And Netanyahu had just won election. And he came and addressed the joint houses of Congress, and I was there. But what that actually spurred in our discussion was, oh, wait, who was the prime minister before Netanyahu? And you reminded me who it was.
Yeah. I had wanted to bring up Rabin as a parallel to Netanyahu, who I didn't realize how close Netanyahu's election was to the murder of Yitzhak Rabin. But Rabin was the prime minister immediate previous. And if there was ever an Israeli prime minister who was ever I feel doing the work and moving the needle on this topic. It was Rabin, and Rabin was murdered by a Jewish person, a Jewish extremist who, just like all the other forms of extremism we're talking about, didn't want to see the change Rabin was talking about, even if that change would have been ultimately so much better for so many thousands of people. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's the context here and some of the detail here ends up becoming shocking. After our discussion, I sort of was going back into my historical memory bank, pulled up some of the literature. Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated on November 4th, 1995. He was of the centrist, progressive, sort of pragmatic party in Israel. He was the man who led Israel's participation in the Oslo Accords, which most folks familiar with this time in history will recall that Israel agreed to acknowledge that Palestinians have a right to self-determine. That was a major portion of the Oslo Accords. That the Palestinian Liberation Organization is effectively the political bargaining representative, the voice of the Palestinian people. And they agreed to slowly step down Israeli military presence in the West Bank and Gaza to remove or relocate some Jewish settlements from that area, yeah, and to allow a political party, basically a political apparatus within the Palestinian people in the West Bank and Gaza, to start electing leaders. Now, they did not acknowledge a Palestinian state as a government, right? A nation state.
Right, yeah.
But it was these Oslo Accords, the first one reached in Washington, D.C. in 93, the second one in Egypt in 95. Yitzhak Rabin was leading this effort. He won the Nobel Peace Prize for this effort. And the far-right extremist wing of Israeli politics at that time was the Likud party. It's still a party in Israel. And Benjamin Netanyahu was the head of that party. And the man that assassinated Rabin later said, "I did this to protest the Oslo Accords." He invoked two Jewish traditional legal traditions, Din Rodef and Din Moser. We'll talk about those when we come back. Anya will correct my terrible pronunciations of these things because learning is growing, folks. We do it on the Maggie Dawn Show. Miriam and the women today. It's Anya and Maggie here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Never forget, you can call or text us the old-fashioned way, 844-967-2789, or of course download that app where you can do that with just one click. We're talking about some of the disturbing parallels between the brand of politics and the rhetoric of Benjamin Netanyahu and what's going on currently in the United States, effectively, so as not to bury the lead here, drawing some parallels between Netanyahu's politics and some of his criminal allegations and that of Donald Trump. And Anya's joining me in this conversation. If you'd like to join us this afternoon, 844-967-2789. So we're talking about the prime minister that directly preceded Netanyahu before his first effectively term or period as prime minister. And that was Netanyahu served as PM of Israel from 96 to 99. He was then gone for 10 years, came back in 2009. I'll get more on that in a moment about why did this guy want to be prime minister again. But we were describing the historical, the things that preceded Netanyahu becoming prime minister, including the Oslo Peace Accords, and the fact that the more right party, the more extremist party, the more absolutist party, the party that objected to the accords, that said Israel shouldn't be making these concessions in the efforts to find peace with Palestinians, was the Likud party, led by Netanyahu. He called Rabin in various speeches, quote, removed from Jewish tradition and Jewish values, end quote. Rabbis aligned with the Likud party proclaimed, and you tell me how to say this, Din Rodef. How do you say this?
You know, I think you've got, yeah. Din is a common word. It tends to mean like court, like Beit Din.
Law.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Law, court. Yeah. But I think you're saying it Rodef. Yeah.
Bin Rodef.
Din Rodef. Din, yeah.
Din Moser. Which I'm probably getting a little wrong. Those of you who know Yiddish or want to give us really good, vibrant pronunciation where Anya and I might not know, you're always welcome to call us, 844-967-2789. So Din Rodef is the law of the pursuer, which basically, through Jewish tradition, gives to the Jewish people sort of an innate right of self-defense. If you're being pursued, sought after, in other words, if someone's threatening you, you have the right of self-defense. And Din Moser is law of the informer. These things intersect, where if someone is informing on you, revealing who you are, where you are, what you believe, to threaten you, Jewish folk believe we have the right to defend, to inform other people about the informer on us so as to protect ourselves. Well, rabbis aligned with the Likud party back then actually said that these laws could be invoked against Yitzhak Rabin personally. Does that rhetoric ring a bell with anybody? And in July of 95, 4 months before Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated, Netanyahu led an anti-Rabin, anti-peace, anti-Oslo Accord rally. It was a mock funeral procession with a cough and a hangman's noose. And the protesters were chanting death to Rabin. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Following the rally, Netanyahu's then chief of national security, Carmi Gillon, told Netanyahu that they had uncovered a plot on Rabin's life and asked Netanyahu to dial back the rhetoric. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Netanyahu refused. 4 months later, Rabin was killed by a man who invoked both Din Rodef and Din Moser, and being opposed to the Oslo Accords as his justification. He considered the assassination justified. I had a vague recollection of this, but when I read it, Anya, I have to say, I got chills.
Yeah.
I mean, hang Mike Pence, anybody? Using language of the purity of tradition and values, right? That Rabin was removed from Jewish tradition and Jewish values, the sense of xenophobia, the denial of self-determination to one particular group based on religious and ethnic differences. Does this sound familiar? Now, Netanyahu went to the private sector for a goodly time, but he ended up getting brought up on charges of fraud and bribery after 3 years of investigations in 2019. At the time, he had been serving for Ariel Sharon, another prime minister. Many of you may remember these names. They start coming back, right? Because Israel's always been an ally to the United States since its creation. He had been serving as the Minister of Foreign Affairs and then the Minister of Finance. So he gets brought up on these charges. So what does he do? He runs for prime minister. Does this sound familiar to anyone? Now, when we were talking about the show before, we were talking about the language and sort of the idea of othering, Anya. We're going to come back and start there because borders, Boy, isn't that a matter of current debate? And one of the roots of the problem going on in the Mideast. We're going to start there when we come back. Join Anya and I on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 844-967-2789, where no topic is too uncomfortable or complicated for us. We get into it, don't we? Thanks for listening. Lock it in. We'll be back in a few. To that. Thanks, Anya, as always and ever, for the great music that is so topical and poignant for these discussions. I know I appreciate it. We hear from our listeners all the time about how much they appreciate it as well. If you want to join our conversation today, we're exploring some of the eerie similarities between not only Netanyahu's first rise to power, his second rise to power, and what his prime ministership has been sort of marked by. And we were talking about, I was queuing up some of the parallels between the rhetoric employed by Donald Trump and certain members of the GOP talking about our southern border and some of the languaging and positions taken by Netanyahu related to Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. Now, an important caveat here: Hamas is a terrorist group. Hezbollah are a terrorist group. They have killed women and children. War crimes have been committed. These were targeted attacks on civilians, targeted attacks, kidnappings of non-combatants. Is not exactly equivalent of civilian death when a country defends itself. The United States has killed innocent people in the Mideast. So I just want to put that out there as a caveat, because please don't angrily email or text us about that. Yeah. That's not the point.
It's more like Hamas is to the southern border situation here, kind of like the violence regarding the cartel in Mexico or violence regarding organized crime elsewhere, you know, in the same way, right? It's not indicative of all the individuals who live there. It's indicative of violence begets violence, and it's really terrible, right?
Well, and isn't that such an appropriate explainer, Anya? Because the language of Donald Trump and many is to conflate immigrants and those seeking asylum with those that seek to enter our country to do us harm, building into the framework with which we're approaching that issue an innate suspicion, a presumption of bad faith of the other or the immigrant. Now, that candidly was part of Netanyahu's party line approach, the Likud party's approach to Palestinians. They do not acknowledge the right of Palestinians to self-determine, to self-govern. And in the recent years, you've seen from Benjamin Netanyahu overt steps to annex the West Bank. Haaretz has called some of the steps and Haaretz is the largest newspaper in Israel.
Oh, I'll correct that one. I'll correct that pronunciation. Sorry.
Tell me.
I wanted to tell you when Dom was on Haaretz, if that helps.
Haaretz.
Haaretz. It means it's the land.
A's, right?
Yeah, it's like Eretz Yisrael is like old Bible talk for the land that is Israel.
Israel.
Even before 48 and all these things, the concept of the land.
Correct.
Yeah. Haaretz. Yeah. Sorry, get back into it.
Haaretz. No, no, no. This is, let's get it right and let's learn, right? So Haaretz called some of Netanyahu's recent years of policies vis-a-vis Gaza and the West Bank and resettlements to actually amount to ethnic cleansing. Especially in, for those of you wonks, what's referred to as Oslo-defined Area C, including the Hebron Hills and the Jordan Valley. Hey, does this sound a little bit like some of the GOP rhetoric? Now, make no mistake, to have good immigration processes, we do have to have a border that we are defending, right? There is a process. We don't want bad actors who intend us harm coming. But some of the criticism of Netanyahu has been that by pursuing an aggressive policy, which many believe violate international law, did he take his eye off the ball by vilifying all Palestinians? Did you actually miss the very real threat from the terrorists?
Yeah.
So there's a parallel. Go ahead, Anya.
Well, I was just going to jump in. I mean, it does feel like, you know, it's so hard to talk on these things. But yes, you know, to paint a picture wherein everyone on one side is the enemy, right? Okay, well, now you've painted the real enemy in the same shade as a bunch of other people. All you've done is cut yourself off at your own knees at trying to find the people who are actually, and to be clear, right, that is the issue with Hamas being Hamas. Hamas has said, if you read it from their own words, their goal is to kill Jews, right? Yep. And that is not the goal. Obviously,
and to eliminate the theoretical age-old nation of Israel,
yes,
right?
Yes. As opposed to what is, frankly, every other Palestinian's interest, which is surviving and having a good life, right? That's the difference. So it's just so hard, to watch Netanyahu and these others who think that this like hyper security, this like clenched fist approach was ever the right way to go, because all you've done is make more and more enemies, and it's just horrifying.
Well, when the other is, by your rhetoric and framework, evil, how is any compromise, how is any brokered peace possible?
Yeah. Right? How can you compromise with evil, and how can you compromise with someone who called you evil? I wouldn't be able to. I'm not a big enough person to do that. So, I mean, how could we expect, not that I'm the standard, but how could we expect anybody else to, right?
Well, you're pointing out that if you as a human being are convinced to believe that the other person, the other party, right, the other religious group of people that believe something differently from you, look differently, are innately evil. If that were true, you wouldn't accept any compromise or any path towards peace.
You couldn't.
But how? And again, I don't want to mistake or conflate peace, liberation, and justice. Okay? They're all individually necessary, but individually insufficient for human flourishing, right? And again, peace, liberation, justice. Hat tip to Stokely Carmichael many moons ago, who put that, tried to explain those concepts. Now, for those of you who don't know this, again, wonk here, Stokely Carmichael then did change his name. Notable civil rights activist Kwame Ture was his then selected self-identified name. And let's not call someone what they don't want to be named. Why don't we go to the phones, invite some folks in. Annie, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Say hi to Anya and I. What do you think?
This is such a mess. I don't understand so much of why we support Israel so blindly. In a way, Netanyahu is just significant of the problem. I read two things. An article in the late 80s I read where an Israeli Jew was pleading, you know, stop sending us money because, you know, at least because it was being used to build Israeli buildings in land that was supposed to be for the Palestinians. You know, I thought that sort of started my interest in this. And also, I never knew about in 67, the USS Liberty was aircraft bombed, then torpedoed, and then even against international law, the lifeboats were attacked by Israelis, and 34 American Navy sailors died, 171 wounded. And this is, you know, it was just like, oh, gee, we're sorry. And it's all secret, so we can't really say they're sorry. And it's.
I just want to jump in there. First of all, I am not personally familiar with the national security event that Annie is referring to. I will, as we always try to do, look that up and look into it, of course. So we'll do that. But I think I may dislike and disagree with the manner in which Annie posed some of those questions, right? Because why do we support Israel? Because Israelis and Jewish people also have an innate right to self-determine, to safely practice their faith. They are a race that has been, over the entire course of human history, systemically tried to have been erased. I don't know how they've been the subject of genocide.
Exterminated.
Thank you. So that is in part why we help fund Israel. But we cannot dictate to Israel how they pursue their nation's self-defense.
And if I can just jump into this statement, like the words we and the words support and the word Israel, I have such a hard time contending with, because I want to be really clear, like, in what other instance are you asked, do you support insert nation here? And that word support means allow it to continue to exist, right?
Exist.
Like, I support that people who live in China can stay in China, move to somewhere else, do what they want, right? But that doesn't mean I support the Chinese government or everything it does or the way it treats everyone. In the same way, I do not support, right, the totality of the Israeli government. I don't support the totality of the American government, because there's a lot of people involved in both who make a lot of really terrible, stupid, racist, cruel choices. But we don't go, okay, well, now you don't get to exist anymore. Bye-bye. Good luck. Hope you can find another homeland in a couple hundred years. That's quite a scary thing to contend with, you know.
Importantly, and I apologize for butting in, Anya, but importantly, for Israel to continue to exist, it requires American funding. Because that was sort of the baked into Annie's question there.
Yes, yeah.
I think that's a false choice. It's not, do we support Israel? It's how and in what amounts.
Right. Absolutely. And who, frankly, who do we support? I don't support Netanyahu, but if someone else came in and was like, hey, I'm here and here's my good solutions, I want peace, I'd be like, I support that guy. He might become a part of the Israeli government one day. I don't know. It's just people.
Yep. We appreciate everybody, you know, calling. We've got a few callers. Keep joining us, 844-967-2789. It's complicated. It's hard to talk about, but talk about it we must, and trying to do it in a way that's grounded in humility and compassion, I think is really critical. And yet trying to extrapolate some of these lessons. Netanyahu had, again, three separate criminal charges pending when he won election in 2019. Bribery, quid pro quo arrangements, effectively paying off for good press. Geez, does this sound familiar? There was a billionaire telecommunications mogul. He was paying off for allegedly favorable treatment. These charges still pending. He still won election in 2022. Huge conflict of interest as well. Namely, that he then went about dismantling the justice system under which he was going to be prosecuted. Does that sound familiar to anyone? We're going to continue breaking this down when we come back. I'm Maggie Dawn. That's Anya Esther. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Made a wrong turn once or twice, dug my way out, blood and fire, bad decisions, that's alright. Welcome to my silly life, mistreated, displaced,
welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. We got one segment left. Join us for this important, tough, sometimes uncomfortable conversation that we just have to have. My deep thanks, as always, to Anya for jumping in here with me, sharing about yourself, of yourself, and your great knowledge. It is appreciated. We're going to go to the phones, but I just want to get through a couple of these other comparisons and parallels. The biggest one is what Netanyahu has tried to do to basically dismantle the judiciary branch in Israel since his re-election. He was facing all these crimes. He's basically attacked the legitimacy of it, has proposed legislation to basically strip the judiciary of the power to overturn laws. This has led to massive protests across Israel earlier this year. It was so undemocratic that scores of Israeli reservists, members of their military, resigned. 10,000 more threatened to resign. What's Donald Trump doing here? Exactly the same thing. Netanyahu elevated loyal extremists that he went back a while with, as well as those who had effectively pledged loyalty to him, to the highest levels of power in his cabinet, leading departments in the military. And it's become very clear that these people are acting and supplicating themselves to Netanyahu because it increases their personal power. Most of them know in good faith it's not good for the nation of Israel. Does this sound familiar to anyone? People willing to trade away principle and their oath to constitution and country for personal political power gains. I'm talking to you, Jim Jordan. Netanyahu has basically taken out longstanding military and intelligence leaders who it wasn't assured would be personally loyal to him. As Haaretz, the editorial board, observed, quote, Netanyahu marked the army, the Shin Bet security service, and a majority of the public as enemies of the people, quote unquote, in his pursuit of his own evasion of accountability. Does this sound familiar, anyone? This was the mix of stuff happening in Israel when Hamas, a terrorist organization that wants to seek the annihilation of the state, the nation of Israel, and all of its people, that's when they decide to strike. At that level of internal strife and delegitimization of institutions is going on in Israel. Does this sound familiar to anyone? We should be very afraid and concerned. And this is not partisan. Let's go to the phones. We got Jack from Merrimack. You're on the air. Say hi to Anya.
Hi, Anya.
Hi, Jack.
So don't say that in an airport. Sorry, old bad joke. You stole a lot of my thunder. I was going to point out that Netanyahu had essentially sacked their Supreme Court. And if you don't think that's happened in this country, you haven't been paying attention. I'm sure you have been paying attention. And it's not just about political power in the Supreme Court. They got plenty of that, that's for sure. But it's also about gaining monetary reward, and our Supreme Court in this country. It is a very concerning situation, and this whole tear down of the political and the electoral process and the judicial process and the law enforcement process, all that stuff, very, very characteristic of what happened in fascist Germany back in the 1930s.
I agree with you. It's a frightening moment. And again, Netanyahu, basically a strong man. He is asked Israelis to give up many of their democratic and privacy rights, and did all of this in the exchange for a promise to keep the nation safe. Does this sound familiar to anyone? And it didn't keep Israel safe, did it? Mark from the SAC, you're on with Anya and I. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Great seeing you guys last night at the party. It was, a joy. But yeah, it's just so sad that in Israel's case, when Rabin was murdered, assassinated by a right-wing extremist, it brought to mind that, remember that Gandhi was murdered by a right-wing extremist, and the troubles that between Pakistan and India that have gone on.
India moving, sorry to interrupt you, Mark, India moving towards authoritarianism right now. Listen, when we get afraid, when we think we're under threat, when someone then exploits that, right, this is what happens. Sorry to interrupt, Mark.
No, and it's just tragic that in both cases they're ethnic brothers. I mean, in the case of, in India and in Israel, I couldn't help but think of the story of Jacob and Esau, where they're ethnic brothers, and they found a way to reconcile it. Just hopefully at some point in time, somebody will have the wisdom that they can find reconciliation between the Palestinian people and the Israeli people, because they're...
I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. We are coming up on time. If you want to get your last word in, 844-967-2789. Just look at what's going on in the House of Representatives right now. The GOP is no longer a legitimate political party in the United States. It's not. If you're a conservative, start over. Because your party has been lost. Lost to ideologues and extremists, the exploiters of the nation's anxiety. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. Hillary Rodham Clinton just wrote a think piece for The Atlantic. Its title is The Weaponization of Loneliness. And that's what we've got going on now. And unless we can rediscover, find again community, find a way to identify the values that we have in common, whether or not we look the same, pray the same, eat the same, live in the same places. Unless we can come together on the values, we are in an existential moment of threat for the United States brought on by us. So, let's come together again. Moderates, pragmatists, speak up and out. Let's end the legislative paralysis. Find a compromise leader, not the wingnut that leads the group of wingnuts. That's not helpful, Mr. Jordan. And let's ensure that our elected officials care more about community and country than they do about their own personal power. No more chaos agents, no more liar, liar, pants on fire. We can do this, everybody. And thanks for tuning in. I hope this is a small step in pursuit of that most worthy goal. Thank you, Anya, Esther. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the Maggie Dawn Show.